Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the path to self-leadership mastery and life success. Redefine how you lead as you redesign your business. I call this dual innovation leadership. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and effectively. Discover something new from our meaningful conversation today. Welcome to We Mentor Mondays. I'm Nancy, and I've been having this behind-the-scenes conversation with Edmund Hewitt, today's guest mentor. It's been wonderful because I forgot to record the first half of our conversation, so it added a very funny dimension to our conversation. Lucky he has such a great sense of humor. Thanks, Edmund. Welcome to episode 381. We're stepping out of the linear career lane with Edmund Hewitt, part two. As a kid growing up on a farm in Midwestern Canada, Edmund Hewitt spent countless hours lost in imaginative storytelling, obsessing over all things relating to aviation, architecture, and illustration. His penchant for expressive design helped to lay a formative foundation for what would eventually blossom into a long career in brand advertising. Edmund emerged as a creative director in a New York City-based company of 20-plus advertising design and PR firms working for clients like Honda, TD Bank, Expedia, Singapore Airlines, Microsoft, and Kenneth Cole Fashions. In 2016, he shifted gears to focus his time and attention on revisiting his childhood passion for aviation and built a practice area in the airline space with a partner. Revisiting his childhood passion connected him with a longtime friend, Peter Clark, in a new way. Together, they formed an aviation-focused design firm partnership called Forward Studio. It isn't often that we can have a childhood friendship evolve into a business partnership and entrepreneurial collaborator like Edmund found in his Canadian friend, Peter Clark. Through their collaboration and innovative thinking, they expanded their international airline branding and public relations studio work to include brand design, PR, media, advertising, and special events. And that's what we talked about in our first conversation, was he's making this transition, right, into exploring your, and I'm looking right at him so I can use him as a, you know, his name. Edmund, you're exploring this other dimension of yourself that involves illustration and design and kind of taking your work, your personal work, into a new dimension that's outside of how you commercially are running your current business, Forward Studio. What he's done is he described this manufacturing, this airlines manufacturer.
Aircraft manufacturer.
Yeah. So why don't you explain that again?
Sure. So we are getting a temperature read, so to speak, on the concept of marrying some type of art event exhibition with a public relations media mixer. So bringing airline journalists into one place and giving the event, the evening, a backdrop that is quite special in that it's artistic, using art, not just a promotional graphics or something more commercial. To do that, we have to sort of thread the needle a little in terms of talking to possible sponsors about the idea. And again, getting a sort of a sense from them as to if they think it would fly or if they feel like it's worthy. And so we're getting a lot of really great feedback from top tier media, journalists, aviation reporters. These are people that are hard to get a hold of, especially at the bigger, you know, the New York Times, the Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, the writers whose beat is aviation, aerospace, airline. The bigger publications, they're hard to get a hold of, and they don't just show up for any reason. So you really have to understand and court them. And part of that is, you know, working with them a little bit and getting their thoughts as you move down the path as it relates to would they or would they not? Is this something worthy? Is it not? And so we've been very pleased to find out that there's been a good reception to the idea. So that's another green light to continue going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And with every entrepreneur, when you're rolling out a new idea, you know, getting feedback from key people, as you're developing it and exploring it, and you've got a green light, so you can like showcase it in a big way, but it's also, you know, freaking you out.
Yes, big time.
Okay. Yes, yes. So you mentioned in our last conversation that newness was something that stood out for you in our conversation. Can you say a little bit more about that?
We were speaking and you threw that line out and I immediately heard it and was like, oh my God, I love the idea of finding newness, because really it's sort of symbolizes my entire job is finding newness for clients, finding a new way to express things, you know, the use of creativity in terms of finding newness. So I just like those words and what they represent. And I think it speaks very much to where I am right now, both personally and professionally. You know, at 50, what are you doing and why? And how is it interesting to you? Because so many of us know what it's like to work at a job where it's like, yeah, it might pay well, but boy, it's sucking all my soul. You know, it's just,
yeah.
And people have to do it, you know, and I get that. And so if you have this chance to do something that is personally interesting to you or fulfilling, then you need to go for it. Find that path and keep going.
Yeah, absolutely. I read an interview that you had with 360 Online Magazine. And you discussed being a livery designer, a yes. new term for anyone outside of the airline industry. Can you tell us about your background in design in that area and how you shaped your career as a livery designer?
Sure. So the term livery really refers to the deckling on the aircraft. So we've all seen liveries because that's what the plane has been, how it's been painted. So every airline has its own livery. Because I work in the branding space, which is really a consultative practice where we take creativity, strategy, and design and help our clients and their businesses. In the aviation world, the branding assignments that we get often involve a livery. Not always. Sometimes they don't. But when the client comes to us, the airline comes to us and says, you know, we want to start a new airline, or we want to change the airline from this to something more like that, can you help us in terms of the creativity? And so I would be looking at the brand in terms of every touch point that the customer would see along his journey. So we look at it from unaware, aware, consideration, pre-flight, flight, post-flight. So if you're the passenger and my job is to make sure that you're feeling affinity with Delta, let's say. Mm-hmm. My job is to make sure that every point along the way where you come into contact with the Delta brand, whether it's a TV commercial, the website, because you're looking for information about something, to when you get to the airport and there's the signage, to when you go to the boarding lounge, to when you get on the plane. The airline is thinking very carefully around every touch point that customer is going to interact with. The job is really to make sure that there's no gaps in the expression of that brand. Even when it comes to the livery of the aircraft. So like I said, not every airline is coming to us saying, please change our livery. That's a very expensive proposition when you're looking at a plane that's several hundred million dollars and you have to paint it, let alone you have a fleet of 50 of those planes. So the livery is usually it's a special part of the project. And in some cases, I've been asked to work on those projects, which means the airline is entrusting the cost and risk of getting it right or wrong to you. And so the job is a high pressure job, but it's incredibly creative, especially if you love airplanes. So yeah. As an av geek, I really understand the physical expression of the aircraft. The fuselage is cylindrical. So applying a graphic motif onto an aircraft in the kind of detail you need to requires a real focus and painstaking focus on how to do it properly. And so not any designer can just design a livery. You really have to understand how the aircraft presents both in the sky and on the ground. So I have done a few of those projects. I really enjoy them. And I feel like the clients have been very happy because, again, there's a huge risk that if you don't get it right, that's massive cost to have to change it. So yeah, I that part of the job I really love. But like I said, it's part of an overall mix of assignments. It's not the only thing, but it is the most fun.
Yeah. Well, the airline industry has really undergone such changes since, especially since the 70s and 80s.
Yes.
When that sneaker guy had a bomb in his sneakers or something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And we flew a lot more carefree. I remember dropping my brother and his new wife at the airport. There was a storm coming in and we were driving fast to make it on time. Yeah. But it was when you didn't need to be at the airport a couple of hours before your flight. And so I drop them off. I go quickly park. I run through the entire airport to the course and I see them, you know, I say, wave goodbye. They let me on the flight just to say goodbye, which is unheard of. And then I was able to see them in the air. That to me was flying. Pure joy. And you would meet people at the airport for lunch, you know, if they had a flight that was delayed. And, you know, it was just a lot relaxed.
Yeah.
More relaxed.
The business has changed drastically. And I think it started with deregulation. So prior to deregulation in the 80s, the governments were very much responsible for funding the operations, both on the ground and in the air. There was a lot of regulation. In the 80s, when airlines were wanting there to be deregulation so that they could compete more freely, I think in some ways it gave customers more choice. But honestly, I don't know if ultimately deregulation has proven to be the success that it was expected to be, in that there's been a lot of consolidation.
Yeah.
And the big players, you know, are very, very brutal about their markets and they're competitive. And so what you end up with is sort of like, you know, a small consortium of big players who are really focused on bottom line. And then you have this sort of commodification of travel, this democratization of travel, which in some ways is great, but the experience has really been challenged by that, because when you come to the airport, it's not the experience that you wish it would be. There's nowhere to sit. They want to funnel you through quickly. There's always a safety, you know, purview on everything now. I mean, it's just not what it used to be. And so I often get clients who say to me, how do we bring back a level of romance and humanity?
Yes.
Travel. And to me, that calling is really like, that's the calling that I want to rise to occasion on, is like, how do I work within this new reality in a way that's going to, in some small or, you know, impactful way, bring back a little bit of romance, glamour, humanity to the experience of travel, which has become, like I said, very commodified and just, you know, it's not glamorous at all, really. Unless you're that, you know, unless you're Delta's, you know, top 1% business traveler, for those people, travel can be incredibly comfortable, exclusive, you know, rewarding, literally. But for the masses, for the majority of people traveling, it's not that way at all. So it's hard.
Yeah. And I just wonder how that impacts your ability to help them with advertising campaigns and...
Yeah. Well, this livery I worked on for an airline that was based out of Alaska, I told the CEO that, you know, I told him the story about bringing glamour back and he loved it. And I said, you know, the aircraft is going to sit at the tarmac as people are waiting for their flight. It's really a billboard. And so what are we communicating with the livery? And so what I tried to do with that project was take an older aircraft. They weren't able to afford brand new aircraft. So they bought older air, but they were, you know, 757s are a beautiful piece of equipment, but it was an older plane. So I was like, how do I turn something a little older into something fresh and new? So the design of the livery, highlighting aspects of the aircraft specifically, these are all little things that I was doing so that I could turn what would have probably looked like just a generic livery into something that looks more like a private jet. So I used a lot of black. The typography was really, really thoughtfully chosen. It wasn't just splashed across the plane, large and heavy-handed. It was much more sort of elegant, so that the overall presentation is one that looks a little bit more professional, a little bit more sexy, a little bit more stylish. And it was a low-cost carrier. That was the other thing, is that most low-cost carriers, they position around fun, quirky, wacky. I wanted the presentation to feel esteemed, international, romantic. And I wanted people who had spent less money to feel like they were getting on something that should cost a lot of money. I wanted a contradiction of terms to happen. And so the livery did not look wacky and fun. It looked sophisticated and elegant. And that was my small way of bringing back a little bit of beauty and romance to something that should have felt much more commodified. That was, you know, one of the examples. I think it's a great challenge. And there's all kinds of ways that you can make things special for people, how you communicate with them, the language you use, the tone, a commercial that you produce. You can paint a picture that is more relevant and relatable, or you can paint a picture that makes the airline seem a little out of reach, or, you know, a little bit too international. And I don't know, it depends on what the brief is. I, you know, every brief is different, but definitely there are ways to elevate the ceremony of travel and to bring a little bit of that sort of old world romance back into it using technology, using modern aspects of travel. So,
beautiful. Yeah, it's good to hear that there are, you know, there's always creativity you can add in.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Well, I was curious, how did you and Peter assert self-leadership through the 2020 and 2021 pandemic?
How did we assert leadership? I don't know if it was as much, part of it was, I think we talked about being resourceful.
Yeah.
Looking for ways to stimulate the business when we felt like a lot of our clients were just locked down. I mean, we did this really crazy launch for an airline in San Bernardino during the pandemic. And I don't know, looking back, I don't know why it went off really well and it was a success. But I remember thinking, like, how are people going to get there? And how are we going to make sure that they're looked after in terms of like masks and all of the testing, like all the stuff that was very, you know, top of mind back in that 2020, 21. And so we had to have a certain degree of confidence. We had to have a sort of a leadership mentality, like this is going to happen, push forward. Let's not get sidetracked too much. Let's motivate the client. The client was even nervous too. Like they're like, are you sure we should be doing this? And we're like, absolutely. We had to assert ourselves in that way. Peter, again, is way better when there are situations that sort of come down on you, like this pandemic. Peter is way better at being like, okay, here's what we're going to do. Like he's where I can get very doom and gloom. I got, you know, I'm more the artist, so I'm going to be a little bit more dramatic about it. Like, oh, can we do this? And then Peter, I think, is a little bit more buttoned down. Like, okay, here's what we're going to do. And then that, once I see those basic steps in place, then I join in. So I think we depended on each other a lot. And because we're good friends and we have that trust, I think it was really helpful for us.
Do you think it deepened your partnership, your business partnership and friendship?
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, he and I have been through so much in our lifetime. I mean, I met him when I was in my early 20s and we became fast friends and we both had the same interest, both in terms of airplanes. He was a little more entrepreneurial. So like, I think I'd mentioned, I was thinking, oh, I'm going to be an architect. I'm like, no, you're not. You don't have math. But Peter said, well, why not take some of your artistic abilities and can't we use that, create a design practice? And so, you know, that was sort of the genesis really. And then we have always gotten ourselves into situations that, you know, we maybe bit off a bit more than we could chew and we saw our way through it. And the only way you can do that really is to have a little bit of trust and respect for one another. And every time you succeed, you know, it just builds that level of confidence and trust even more. Fight about stuff all the time, but
yeah, you also seem to motivate, you know, know how to motivate each other to kind of be your best and bring out each other's best.
So much more patient. Like he's very patient with me because I can be very difficult about getting things done in the way that I think I should do them. And he just is really able to let a lot of it, you know, like water on a duck's back. He just like lets it go and it works. But when I think through how we're just very different. I get emotional. I get passionate. He's much more level-headed. Not to say that I'm not level-headed in my own way, but he allows me to be the best I can be by understanding believers a little bit. And it has worked for us. So
Yeah, it's tremendous. And it's hard to find good partners in business that you feel like you can grow with over a long period, like decades and decades. Yeah. Like a lifetime together. So it's a beautiful thing that you've got. And I'm glad that he's embracing you as you're kind of adding this dimension to your projects.
I mean, I love how you've worded that, Nancy, because I don't think he would say that. He wouldn't say those words at all. But, okay. But I think essentially, yes, that is really
Through that experience, are you leading differently now as a result of what you went through in 2020 and 2021?
I think I am in some ways calmer about leadership. So for example, the call that I related to you with that aircraft manufacturer, the younger me, the earlier me, when it comes to leadership, I maybe would have fought it a little bit more. I would have been more risk adverse. We have to get this all organized. We can't have the call yet, Peter. Now, let's just have the call. Calm down a little bit about those things and just see where it goes. And that comes, you know, a little bit more confidence that you have gained to allow me to lead in that way with Peter.
Did it also bring you closer to people, like getting to know them more, like finding out how they're doing? And did you experience some of those things too?
Yeah. Most of our clients are like good corporate friends at this point. The projects are intense and they have a fairly long period. So you really get close to these people. You need to decide early on how you're going to relate to them. And again, I think Peter's really good at this. He really is better at relating to people as people, whereas I see them as clients. And what I've learned, and I'm getting better and better, is that when we're talking to the client, they're people. And the higher up they are, the more they respond to that natural energy that you bring. If you treat them like the client, you know, the good ones don't respond as well to that. You know, it's somewhat stifling. So Peter has been great at sort of just bringing that level of humanity into those conversations. I have followed along, and I think we've been better at selling our ideas or pitching our ideas to prospective clients when we're more relaxed about things.
You bring out your more authentic selves, and that gives like the client permission to also be authentic in how they're relating to you. And it's a huge dimension in having long-term healthy relationship with people, you know, where you're interacting a lot. You know, every interaction that you have is an opportunity to kind of build in another level of understanding one another and learning how they work together. Because many times, I'm sure you know, the first time you're in a project, you're thrown together, you've got these parameters of how you're working, you've got deadlines, and it's a creative process, and you don't know how everybody works. And so getting to know them quickly is essential.
I was going to say there are some clients that have been the opposite. You know, it's been difficult. Yeah, you know, you're not getting paid enough for it and they're not making it any easier. You know, I always say like there's like four quadrants, you know, like the ultimate is you make a lot and you're personally and professionally satisfied. And then the others are like, I'm making a lot of money, but the client's horrible, you know, but I'm doing it for the money. Or I love the client. I wish they could afford, but I'll do it anyways. You know, like which one is it?
Yeah.
There are some where it's like, okay, you're not fun to be on the phone with. Like you're difficult to work with. You're not paying me enough. Like, you know, sometimes you get into those spots and you just have to figure out how to get through it.
Yeah.
But I would say more often than not, it's been a positive experience. And we've made some pretty good friends in the business that, you know, are either corporate friends or become personal friends.
Nice.
And so, that's, I think, part of the marketing advertising world is that there's a potential to connect with people beyond the project as the client.
Yeah.
And if you can find that nexus, great things can happen. I mean, I've literally done, my best work has been done with clients that have given me the autonomy to do what I need to do. But, you know, you ride that, go along in that journey, and it's a bit of a roller coaster, but more often than not, I think I've found the best in those people, and we've found success because of it. So
nice. Yeah, you're right. It is a range, and people are in all different places, and it doesn't leave you much room for flexibility and creativity. And it doesn't give you a lot of room to grow in a relationship when you're that stifled.
No, in the branding world, a big part of the success that we see is if a client is prepared to suspend belief in the initial stages where, let's say I'm doing a mood board. So, you know, they're like expecting me to do the design. And I'm like, well, we're not doing design yet. We're just simply going to explore a mood. And they're like, what? Especially airline operators. They're not marketing people. They run airlines. They're thinking about fuel prices and mechanics. And now you're asking a room full of guys or people to say, okay, we're going to talk about your brand, but we're going to think of it through the lens of a mood board. And it really is a big, like, you see these people looking at you like, what? And my job is to convince them to go on that little journey with me. So I say to them, we've talked strategically about the brand attributes that represent the strategy points of your business. My job is to come up with something intangible that is very sort of spiritual, mm-hmm. that is going to hit all those business criteria that you've set out. That's my job. And to do that, I've got to go really high and big. And then we're going to bring it down to earth into what is a design for a livery or a brochure. Like, but first we're going to talk mood. The clients go on that journey with me, God bless them, because some of them are just like, those are the ones where we find collaborative success. Because when they give me the time to describe a collage to them and bring it to life with language, thematic storytelling, and when I show them a snippet of a color with a picture that just symbolizes something, and I spin it into something different than they expected, little lights go off. You can see it.
Yeah,
and
nice.
That little light goes off on their end, they're hooked. And then my job is now to bring it down to earth and to say, okay, you see that little collage where I use the blue and the gray and a little bit of that type? Yes, you know, and we've talked about, you know, the art of possible. Like, that, maybe that was my story. The art of possible, your airline is the art of possible. The art of possible. Yeah, and it's using these colors, these wispy, like, you know, white, gray, and blue. Yeah, here's your livery. And it uses the white, the gray, and the blue. And it doesn't say art of possible, but it really feels like this plane is like something from the heavens. That, like, my job is to elevate and to turn it into something that means more and that feels like it means more. And then, of course, we're going to design the perfect website. And we're going to, that journey is so important at the beginning. And the clients that really, that play fairly with you, they, you know, they go on that journey with you, are the ones that usually come out on the other side and like, wow, I really now understand when you talk about like a mood and a story, how that permeates every aspect of my brand. Wow. And it's not arbitrary. It's like, no, it's not. Like, everything is done
right. Yeah.
In an exacting way, but I'm using imagination to hit at the heart. And I believe that powerful brands are doing that. At the core of it, there's an essence that is timeless, that transcends, you know, culture, race, all of it. The best storytelling by the best brands are the ones where the story just keeps being told, you know, and the expression should support it. So the colors, the type, the graphics, the iconography should all support that essence. My job is to come up with the essence. And if I can't get a client to sit with me to understand the essence, we're going to have problems, because that is integral. So that's always been, I think, the challenge in the airline space, more so because people there are not, they're not marketing. They're not really into marketing. They're into operations versus talking to a fashion client. Fashion clients like, you know, Kenneth Cole.
Yeah.
Eek. In mood boards, like, that's all they do. It's like, it's the opposite. It's too flaky.
Yeah.
But airline is like, okay, I'm really going to have to convince this person who doesn't believe that anything I have to say matters.
Yeah.
I have to take them on that journey. And so I love doing those things. And when the person is genuinely in it for the right reasons,
yeah,
friendships usually develop because, you know, they've trusted that they see the results, their success, and then they're very indebted to you. Like they feel like, wow, I can't believe we did all this together. I'm like, yeah. And you help make it happen. Like it's quite powerful. So
yeah, absolutely. Power of the brand. Well, very good. So we've got a few minutes left in our conversation. I was wondering, why do you feel that the timing is right to expand your life work and establish yourself in a new way as an illustrator and artist of all these designs that you're coming up with on the spot?
God, that's a good question. Why is the timing right? I think of it as like more circumstantial. I feel like the timing is very much attached to Peter and I and our past experiences. It's led us to this point, and I'm more confident than ever to sort of branch into new areas. I think it's also because I've done the graphic design and the art direction, the creative direction and the campaigns. I still love doing them, but you know, there's a certain rote component to them.
Yeah.
The timing is right because in my 50s, as I see around me how things come and go, you know, we see our mortality. Why would I not take a step in a new area, a new direction, especially when I have the trust of somebody who has done this with me before and, you know, is there along the way? Like I have that. And why do the same old thing that I've done before? Like, why not try something a little different? So, and I'm in New York City. Jesus, I mean, everyone around me, everybody's doing something. They're all trying something. And that's part of why I love living here is because everybody is here on a mission, so to speak. Like, not everybody. There are people who come here, you know, they're flowing in on the wings of multinationals. They work in fancy offices and they never explore or challenge themselves in any way. You meet those people and they're boring. Then you meet people who are artists or they invent things. They're entrepreneurial. They might have a lot of money. They may not, but there's a spirit. And I feel like, you know, New York City has always been about the artist. You know, unfortunately, the town is becoming gentrified. There are people in this city who have come here to sacrifice. They've sacrificed everything to be here, and they're pushing to find their own success. And I like that energy. I feed off that. And so why wouldn't I tap into that very thing that's happening around me here in New York? Why wouldn't I tap into that? And why would I not use New York as a global platform? Like, this is a world-class city, and why would I not? So it's scary. You know, the thought of failure is always around and, you know, can get a little nerve-wracking. But again, I'm in my 50s now. So like, what do I have to lose?
Like, yeah, I think that's a great question. What do I have to lose?
Right?
Yeah. Like that's what keeps it in perspective. And also, you know, if I fail, what does that mean?
I mean, failure is, listen, in New York City, you fail and you don't make the money, you know, you got to pay the rent. You know, there's always that pressure here, which, you know.
Yeah, we all
don't
have
necessarily
that.
Feel it too much, but I definitely, it's around. And then there's the other side, which is all personal. That's way more difficult, which is like, okay, like people around me who are doing great things are going to see me doing something. How am I going to measure up? You know, because here you're surrounded by, you know, a lot of incredible talent. And so you have to measure up in some way. And that sense of failure, success, that's the hard one. It's the money part is not the worst part. It's the, am I prepared to confront my own abilities as an artist, not as a designer who's been hired by a client who's behind the scenes doing something, you know, like, no, this is me. This is way more sort of, there's more vulnerability.
Yeah.
So that's the failure part. When you talk about failure, like, okay.
Well, and one question you could ask yourself too is, you know, can I be enough no matter the outcome?
Oh God. That one, you know, over a drink. over several drinks. That question is being asked a lot, I'm sure. But it's you're right. That's essentially it, really. It is it.
Yeah, well, that's the pieces, you know, that are worth like digging into, you know, as you're getting further into your own psyche. Or yeah. Around this, that it's like, this is what's tripping me up right now. You know, I'm getting caught over here when I really want to be like, steer the ship over toward, you know, where I really want to do the work. And that's like a little sideshow.
Yeah. And the voices in your head, you know, always telling you, you can't, or you shouldn't, or be careful and all that, you know, it's a big part of it is just being able to manage that, you know, in your mind, like, you know, and to keep going.
And that's part of living an examined life, is knowing oneself so well that you can explore the dimensions of yourself. Like, you've created a safe place for you to do that. That's where courage is. And that's where you start, you know, building out a new dimension of yourself. And that's where, you know, all these learning others, self-analysis, or I mean like meditation skills, and are very helpful at this time, because you're asking, you know, you're examining yourself in a new way
and you're finding newness. I swear, that's gonna be my
good
week. It's all about finding newness, so
yeah, that almost seems like a good title, right? Finding
Nancy,
newness.
You're a copywriter. You know, maybe I should be hiring you to do, you know, concept copywriting or something, because.
Oh, my gosh. Well, run by all your ideas. I could do this all day. I hope this is I can see why, you know, clients really, you know, turn into really lifelong friends with you. You're just a delight. And I just thanks so much for taking the time to share with me and getting to know each other a little more.
My pleasure. And thank you. I feel like I've learned a little bit in our conversation. So thank you.
Oh, good. I hope you can take it with you on your journey.
I will.
Okay. All right. We'll talk soon.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Okay. All right. I'll follow up with an email.
Okay. Sure. Thanks. Okay.
Take care. Bye. And thank you all for tuning in. We'll see you all next time. If you want to expand your leadership skills and become more resilient and competent as a business owner, do you want to bring more meaning to your relationships and more purpose to your business? Are you ready to take charge of how you innovate, create, and run your business? Our dual innovation leadership process will help you redefine how you lead as you redesign your business. We collaborate with you to do what will work for you as you evolve and change. We start with where you are, whether you are turning around a financial crisis, growing to the next level, or somewhere in between. We address your immediate needs, shore up business development gaps, expand relational literacy, and build upon your entrepreneurial leadership skill sets with the short-term results orientation and a long-term perspective. Start by subscribing to this podcast at wementor.com or anywhere you listen to your podcasts. If you are ready to hire a mentor, contact me at nancy@wementor.com. When we mentor, you create better life and a more fulfilling future. As an entrepreneurial leader / innovator, as a competent business owner / practitioner, as a mentor / role model, and as a human being courageously living a meaningful life. As Gandhi said, be the change you wish to see in the world. Get involved today. It's never too late to change your life and how you lead.